I'm just waiting for the chairperson to log on and then we will proceed with the meeting. Thank you.
Shanaz?
Yes, good morning.
Morning, Shanaz.
Yes. Morning, can you hear me?
Or anyone?
Yes, good morning.
How
good
are
morning.
You?
Good morning.
Morning,
everyone. Morning. I thought maybe I had network challenges, or are we using a silent mode of the meeting today?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. I thought we were using silent mode today.
No, I'm just waiting for the chair to log on. She was just on another call when I picked with her now. So give us 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh, that's not a problem then.
Okay.
Honorable, it's here. Us as invited people, we are waiting for Kudumro.
When are we going to Carnarvon again?
Good morning, honorable members and colleagues. May I have indication from the office if there are any apologies this morning?
Good morning, Chair. I have not received any apologies. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Shanag. Thank you very much, honorable members and colleagues, for availing yourselves this morning. We must indicate that today's meeting is a joint committee meeting, as we have invited the Portfolio Committee on Health to join this briefing, where we will be getting a briefing by the Department of Science and Innovation on the RNA vaccine technology transfer hub. Ideally, we would have wanted to have this particular briefing in person, on site, in Cape Town. However, due to the inavailability of members to attend physically, we said, okay, we'll go ahead with the meeting in this format, on virtual. And then at a later stage, we will visit the site. One of the reasons why we thought it was important that we have a joint committee meeting, Honorable Jacobs, the chair of Portfolio Committee on Health, was that there's a lot of work that happens in different departments, and really we are not doing well as a government in terms of synergizing the work that we do. And we've tried, as resolution, of course, of the Chair of Chairs meeting, is to really find a way to have these joint committee meetings so that we're able to close the gaps that really stagnate the work that we're trying to do as a government and as committees, of course. And so, I would like to have an indication if DG Ndraha is here or if the team will be led by Dr. Mofe.
Chairperson, this is Dr. Mofe speaking. The DG is not here.
Okay. All right, that's fine. So the team will be led by yourself. colleague, we have been speaking about some of the work that's been done by the department on the mRNA vaccine. Of course, we've also been speaking about, you know, really wanting Africa to be able to have its own capacity to develop and manufacture vaccine of, well, this particular vaccine that would be quite COVID-19. And we've been kept updated by the department on various developments over time. So this particular matter would not be new to the committee, as we've been doing ongoing work around it. I'd like to check if perhaps Dr. Jacobs would like to also say anything at this point in time before I hand over to the department.
Good morning, and thank you very much for the invitation. We are very pleased as the portfolio committee to this discussion. We ourselves have not had an engagement on this technology and for those who are actually driving the technology before. So we do appreciate this opportunity. We will listen attentively and also contribute to the discussion this morning. So we are very excited, and I'm not sure how many of my members have actually joined. But quite all of them had indicated, most of them had indicated that they would. So thank you, Chairperson of Portfolio Committee on Education. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Jacobs. Perhaps if we show now, I don't know if on your side, if you can see if there are members that from health that are here.
Okay, I can see some of the members from health, but I'm also not sure. I don't know all the names, and I don't see the secretary on the platform that could assist with it, unless they would want to maybe just indicate or introduce themselves.
Yeah, maybe we can allow for members to introduce themselves. In fact, all members, because the members from health would not necessarily know who the members from higher education are. So I see Honourable Anna Geller on the platform. Honourable Geller.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. My name is Honourable Anna Geller from Health Portfolio Committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. The next member, please. Members can just open their mic, hopefully, and we won't speak over one another, but they can just follow one after the other to introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Honourable Hussina Isma from the Health Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chair. I am Honourable Naledi Chura. I also serve in the Health Portfolio Committee, but I'm also a member of this portfolio committee.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Nosta Machezi. I'm the member of the Higher Education Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Everybody here. The name is not Chair, member of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, and Portfolio Committee. Then.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Masunze Yabo. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education, Science and Innovation, and like the book, then it is still the same.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Honourable Jane Mananisa. I'm serving in the Portfolio Committee for Higher Education, Science and Technology. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair. Maybe it's a good time for me to introduce myself. I don't know if we go by a specific list, but I'm Wayne Bosshoff, also member of the Committee for Higher Education, Science and Innovation.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Honorable Zakaba. I serve in the Health Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I hope that is all of us. We've left no one out. I am Nompendulo Mkatwa. I am the Chair of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education. And earlier, of course, you would have heard from Dr. Kenneth Jacobs, who is the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. Thank you very much. I think we all have an understanding of what's going on in the meeting, and I think we are Chiwa serves on both committees, so perhaps she may be able to assist us in creating those synergies between the work that we're doing in science and innovation and the work that is being done in health. So I want to then hand over at this point to the Department of Science and Innovation to take us through the work that is being done in developing this technology transfer hub, which is really exciting. I think, you know, for me, when we get briefings from DSI, it really indicates to us how they attempt to strengthen the capacity of this And so what becomes essential, Dr. Jacobs, in a lot of the work that we are trying to do is how can we ensure that we integrate the work of science and innovation across departments. And at a later stage, we want to lobby yourselves as a committee around, you know, better budget coordination for science and innovation across government. But for now, let's just receive the briefing on the technology transfer hub. Over to you, Dr. Moafe.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just wanted to know, with your permission, if I can also introduce the team, because some of the people in the team you might not have met.
You may do so, Dr. Moafe.
Okay, thanks very much. My name is Maureen Moffi. I'm the Deputy Director General for Socioeconomic Partnerships at the Department of Science and Innovation. I got a team from the department and also from AfriGen and BioTech. I'm just going to allow them first very quickly to introduce themselves. For the purpose of at least the portfolio committee members knowing you, just flash your cameras a little bit so that they can see your faces. Thanks very much. I'm starting with the colleagues from the department.
Good morning. My name is Ben Durham. I'm the Chief Director of Bioinnovation at the Department of Science and Innovation. I'll hand over to Claudina next.
Good morning, honourable members. Claudina Lewis, the Director for Health Innovation at Science and Innovation. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Nidia Kester Matela, and I'm a deputy director in the Department of Science and Innovation. Thank you.
Petro.
Thank you. Good morning, honourable chair and honourable members. I am Pierce de Blanche, managing director of AfriGen. AfriGen hosts the mRNA Hub, and thank you very much for this opportunity to share the progress of this project. Thank you. Good morning.
Morena.
Good morning, honourable members. My name is Morena Mafana. I am the chief executive officer of BioVec. Also equally pleased to be part of this forum and looking forward to the engagement. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. It's Richard Gordon from the Medical Research Council. Very nice to be here and looking forward to the presentation.
Thanks a lot, Richard. I knew that I had forgotten someone. I just wanted to check, Shana, are you going to be projecting the presentation for us, or I'm going to be doing it for myself?
I'm sorry, man, you're going to have to do it from your side.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to load it now. Please let me know if it shows.
Benani, I don't think it's the correct presentation.
It is not the correct presentation.
No, I don't believe so.
Benini, baby, this is Pietro. I'm very happy to try and share because I think you're going to do the first two slides and I will cover most of it and then I can control the flow. Is that, will that be acceptable?
That's perfect.
Honorable, let me try and share from my side and then over to Benini. Is this visible?
That's visible. Yeah, thank you so much. I think, can I just confirm if everybody can see the slide?
Yes, we can,
thank you.
Thanks very much. I just really want to start by introducing this program, firstly by looking at the history of where we're coming from as a country. We're coming from a period where some couple of years back, South Africa used to have the capabilities to manufacture vaccines, which capabilities we ultimately lost. And just around the early 2000s, the decision was taken that we are going to restart this process of building manufacturing capabilities for vaccines. And that is really when BioVac was established. And through BioVac, we have been having a program of building this capability, but we took the approach that says we're going to do what we call backward integration. That means we're starting from the bags, going backward in terms of manufacturing. So you start by selling whatever is given to you, then you go into packaging, then you move from packaging to begin to do your own seed and finish. And all those steps, we needed to have partnerships with the private sector. However, the development is of vaccines by ourselves. We hadn't reached at that stage yet. We were slowly moving towards that. Now, fast forward towards 2019 when the whole world was hit by COVID. And that's when we started to realize that actually, frankly, it was a good decision that was taken to really look at building the local vaccine manufacturing capability. However, we realized that we hadn't actually moved to a point where at the time when COVID hit, we were going to be self-sufficient. So that is really when we started to have a whole range of discussions. Some of the colleagues that are in this meeting, not all of them, were part of those discussions early in 2020 in terms of how can we actually start to put together capabilities to now look at the development of local vaccines to deal with all sorts of other challenges. And as we were busy with that, our president, as you may call, is an active participant in the African Union on matters of COVID, and there was an entity that was established called the COVID-19 Vaccine Global Access, which in other words, in short, is called COVAX. And out of that, there were a number of initiatives that were hatched. One of them actually that came out was the call for the establishment of the mRNA Technology Transfer and Training Hub. And this is really where we put our proposal, and we ultimately were selected as the host of this facility. Now, the mRNA Technology Transfer and Training Hub is a public-private partnership consortium, and it is really meant to improve the health and the health security by establishing sustainable, locally owned mRNA manufacturing capabilities in low and middle-income countries. Now, I always say when referring to this project that it is actually the FIFA World Cup of health projects. So there isn't any big project currently in the world that is aimed to benefit society than this one. So we therefore find that as a result, there are many countries that wish they would have been the ones that are hosting this project. But at this point in time, because they only needed one hub, South Africa is hosting it. So the hub is a company called Afrigen. I have had two introductions when Petra said she's the MD of Africa. And this is where the transfer of technology for vaccines and other mRNA products will be done to 15 to 20 other folks. And these folks will explain to you what this hub and spoke process works, how it works. So basically, the aim is to make sure that during this current pandemic, and in future ones, these low and middle income countries will have the facilities to actually manufacture their own vaccines. We have seen that even with COVID, those countries that had the capabilities to manufacture vaccines, they were not actually having capabilities to manufacture vaccines to the whole world, which is why we ended up with a lot of research in Africa and the rest of the low and middle income countries being at the back of the queue. So this project is basically aimed at addressing that challenge. So in support of a sustainable initiative, the World Health Organization Training Hub. This is going to be located in South Korea. And also what is critical is that when we build the vaccine manufacturing capability, we also need to strengthen the regulatory aspect in all the countries that are involved. And here, starting with our own sector, because it doesn't really help to have vaccine manufacturing capability but not being able to do regulation, because in most instances, you find that medicines and drugs and vaccines could be there, but if the regulatory capacity isn't there, it can still take years before medicines that are available can actually be utilized. Next slide. So in terms of the overview of the project and status, and after this slide, I think I'm going to be handing over to Petro, is that as we were really busy working on our own to try and see how we can build our own capabilities, the World Health Organization made a call for expression of interest to host the technology transfer hub. And here they were looking at one or more technology transfer hubs with a view that in future that will be expanded. So we also know that somewhere towards the end of May last year, our president and the president of France, President Macron, who was visiting here, made an announcement about the partnership that needed to be built to strengthen vaccine manufacturing capabilities in low and middle income countries. And this was followed just about a month later with the announcement of South Africa as that designated mRNA technology transfer hub. So what we started doing then is we immediately got into motion, and just 2 weeks after the announcement, the vaccine manufacturing work group was convened, and that's where the planning started to happen in terms of what is it that we're going to do, how are we going to deal with a whole lot of other issues. And by September, we have already, through the World Health Organization, there was already an announcement of Argentina and Brazil as the spokes that will benefit from this. So what you have is, you have South Africa as a hub. And as a hub, this is where the development and the training is going to happen and the transfer of technology. So, for example, in South Africa, the spoke, which is going to be the benefiting partner, will be our BioVac, which we all know has been central in the logistics around the COVID vaccines in South Africa. So, when the first technology transfer happens, it will actually be happening towards BioVac. And then we have other folks. We've got Argentina, we've got Brazil, we got Indonesia, we got Bangladesh, we got in Africa, we got Tunisia, we got Egypt, we got Kenya, and so on and so forth. And then these folks will be announced, will be indicated in the upcoming slide. So those folks are being announced as time goes on, because the calls for the expression and application, when they happen, they submit, and then the committee can decide who will be added into these folks. So we all know that the latest, in February this year, there was a visit here by the Director General of the World Health Organization to see the progress, and I'm going to leave the issues of progress of Alpha at Petro. And in terms of what we have already done to date. And we are pleased to say that we have, as I'm talking to you now, started training a whole range of other folks. And these folks are manufacturing companies in those specific countries. And you will notice when we mention this that the training is not being done for multinationals, because we are deliberately to have looking at manufacturers that are local to that specific country so that they don't have any discussion in terms of global demand and inflating the local market when the pandemic hits. So lastly, I want to really say that on the 7th of March, Afrigen has received folks for training at the lab scale, and that was Argentina and Brazil. And then I think I will just go to the next slide, which is the last from my side, which is the objective. Now, there are three objectives that we're looking at. One is the establishment of the technology transfer and training hub in South Africa, and the production of clinical batch for first generation of COVID-19 vaccines. Objective two is to move into manufacturing readiness at BioVac, where the training and technology transfer to low-income countries will actually then commence. And then there will always be coordinated development of vaccines, and this is going to be done through our Family Health Council, looking at ensuring that our national consortium can advance vaccine development into other areas. One, in terms of looking at what we call second generation vaccines, and two, in looking at vaccines beyond COVID, because we know that whatever happens to COVID over the next couple of years, there are also a whole range of other diseases that are problematic to South Africa and to the African continent, whether you talk about tuberculosis, whether you talk about malaria, especially the rest of the continent, but also in South Africa and the rest of the continent, also the HIV. And the aim is to use the mRNA technology as a platform on the basis of which to develop other vaccines. So when we talk about the second generation vaccines, we're talking about vaccines that would actually be suitable for our market. For example, we know that some of the vaccines that are in the market require very demanding storage requirements, for example, your minor age storage and so on and so forth. So if we are going to develop vaccines that are relevant to our own environment, it means there needs to be a lot much focus on thermostability so that you don't have vaccines that can easily be spoiled by temperature related issues. So this is really basically what this hub about is about. We just returned yesterday from engaging with various stakeholders and also providing feedback and update on where we are in Geneva on the sidelines of the World Health Assembly. And we are excited that indeed this work is beginning to receive a lot of attention, and we are going to do this to ensure that going forward, we shouldn't have a situation where low and middle income countries are left behind in terms of vaccine access because they don't have capability. And I hand over to Pedro at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mbonene, setting the stage so well for us. Chair and honourable members, on this slide, I think you can clearly see that this the objectives and the focus of this project straddles many departments in South African government, and it is of great excitement that I've learned that in this is a joint committee meeting between two departments that have been supporting us and which are very critical in the success of this project. So leading on from here, three objectives set for this long-term project. And as Mbonene is saying, this project has actually now become a global project and is considered as one of the biggest projects in the global south, with multiple objectives, but ultimately to create vaccine capacity and capability for equity. I'm going to share some of the progress and also a state of some of the challenges this project had to overcome over the last 8 months. For some reason, just to demonstrate to the and to share with the honourable members, the manufacturing of mRNA drug product is different from other vaccine products. It is a combination of a biological and a chemical process, but most important, it is various steps of manufacturing, and it requires multidisciplinary skills. In the original design of this project, the model was that the South African Consortium, BioVac, Afrigen, and the South African Medical Research Council will receive a technology transfer from an established mRNA producer.
Recording in progress.
From an established mRNA producer, and that will fast track the development of the hub in South Africa towards a clinical approval, market authorization, and contribute to supplying vaccine and COVID-19 vaccines. That technology transfer did not happen. And so, credit to the fantastic science base in this country, with Fitz University, together with African scientists, utilize the knowledge base of University of the Witwatersrand using mRNA for therapeutic purpose for cancer therapy development, and Afrigen's capability in formulation and understanding vaccine design and development, combine those capabilities, and in a fairly short period of time, surprisingly short period of time, produce at laboratory scale an mRNA vaccine which is comparable, utilizes the same sequence as the Moderna vaccine. And I'm going to talk a little bit why strategically the decision was taken to use the 1273 sequence as the basis for this vaccine. I also would like to use this slide to re-emphasize that was what Mbeneni earlier said. The current candidate, which is modeled and will be non-inferior to the Moderna vaccine to demonstrate our capacity and our capabilities, is not ideal for low and middle income countries. The thermostability requirements are expensive, minus 20 degrees, cold chain brings its challenges, and the payload for mRNA is quite high. It's an expensive vaccine. So parallel, we are now working at better thermostability and also, of course, a lower payload, lower cost of goods. So these are the objectives, again, just the players. Marina is on call here. Marina, down the line, would be really welcome your comments on where we are and the training that's already happened and how BioVac and African very closely collaborate on process development. And Richard is on this call. He will share objective three with you. But core to this first establishment of a vaccine candidate in South Africa, first in Africa, is Wits University, Afrigen, and of course UCT. So this is the start of it. The process being used is what we call forward innovation, working from the sequence that was published by Stanford University and which is also used by Moderna for their vaccine development. The teams here in South Africa designed the construct and it was produced, the plasmid produced in the US, returned to South Africa and end-to-end. Through forward innovation, using our own knowledge base, public domain knowledge, own experience, has built, designed, and made a lab-scale-based vaccine. This is the process that was followed, the design being done here in South Africa, the plasmid produced internationally, and now we have completed this full process from the design of this vaccine candidate to lab scale full finish. We are finalizing preclinical safety and toxicity protocols. We are doing immunogenicity studies in mice, and we are in discussions with the South African Medical Research Council for the clinical development program of this first candidate, South African designed and developed vaccine for COVID-19. Mbeneni made an important point. This is a platform. So what we're building here at Afrigen in partnership with international experts is a platform that will be suitable for multiple products. COVID-19 is our proof of concept product, but the platform will be suitable for other vaccines to be developed. The project is quite integrated and quite intense in terms of its components in the work packet. This is because this became a greenfields product with no technology transfer. We had to do the process development from basic, from lab scale. We have the CMC, the chemical and manufacturing processes in place right through from the design to final drug substance and drug product production, analytics to be put in place, quality assurance. We're training while we are developing this product, and the preclinical and clinical protocols currently being finalized. Facility readiness, of course, SAHPRA, we have been working very closely with SAHPRA, and we are very confident that SAHPRA will reach their MR3 status before the end of this year. SAHPRA is a part of the process, of course, to get the Afrigen facility here in Cape Town fully licensed Section 22C license that will enable us to produce vaccines under stringent regulatory authority requirements. Facility readiness is between 90% and 40%, depending on standard operating procedures. The team already have developed more than 480 standard operating procedures. These are in various stages of implementation. And again, what this slide demonstrates is that we really went from green fields with nothing to develop a full process. And again, BioVac stepping in to assist us with some of the process validations and development of analytics for quality control and quality assurance. This is a wonderful picture of two unique pieces of equipment, first ever on the African continent, being brought into the Afrigen facility, single-use fermenter. This is a 30-liter fermenter. It has the ability to produce at least 2.5 million doses in one batch of mRNA, a final drug product. And this is the unique equipment required for this, for the formulation of RNA to ensure that we improve thermostability. The building of the facility, we had to, of course, install a massive generator backup power capacity. A facility now bringing unique qualities to the African continent. And I hope that we will, in time, have portfolio committees visiting this facility before we close off for the GMP license, but to be able to walk you through this whole process of a unique facility that will be the first on the continent licensed to produce clinical trial material, not only for mRNA vaccines, but for multiple vaccines, and contributing to a platform that will enable us to do our own vaccine design, development, and manufacturing. So these are some of the laboratories at Afrigen. We based in a warehouse, and it's very custom designed for a fully integrated end-to-end vaccine design and manufacturing facility, but in addition, also unique R&D facilities that will be a national asset and work with our universities and international universities to do the design of novel vaccines for mRNA, microbial, or yeast-based platforms. This is the mRNA hub and spoke model. There's already been 16 spokes awarded and approved by the WHO, creating, honourable members can see here, a network of global south partnerships focusing on capacity development for vaccine manufacturing, which did not exist before. These are the spokes, and Bonini mentioned some of the training. We have since March, that slide has indicated training started. We have progressed quite advanced. We have BioVac has joined a training here on specifically on mRNA processes. We've trained Argentina, Brazil, Indonesia, Bangladesh. These were the spokes already through our laboratories, and the current training is around laboratory scale, how to make an mRNA vaccine. The next phases will to train other spokes, but also then to do scale-up, and ultimately a technology transfer back from Afrigen to BioVac producing industrial-scale vaccines and transfer technology back to Afrigen for transfer to these spokes that forms the network for mRNA platforms in low and middle-income countries. Before I go to the MRC, maybe if I can ask, Moreno, you're on the call. Do you want to share a bit of your perspectives on the progress between BioVac and Afrigen at this point in time? And then we'll go to Objective 3 with Richard.
Thanks, Petra, and thanks for the nice presentation. I think nothing else to add, but I think for the portfolio committee, I think as we go through the details here that Petra is presenting, I think what I'd just like to highlight is the ecosystem that this initiative is assisting us to realize. I think many of us know that, you know, one of the biggest dangers in our areas in terms of non-progress is working silos. However, what you know, Petro is presenting here is an opportunity where you get a biotech company working with a larger one, working with universities and working with others. And so this is, you know, one of the very unique type of initiatives where you get all role players sitting around the table and in their quest to, you know, fulfill a much needed need, which is developing vaccines from scratch. So I just wanted just to add that, Petro, that this ecosystem that is being created, I think is wonderful, and I think very few countries can boast that they can have multiple players in the same country playing different roles, but also with a good end goal in mind. Thank you.
Miranda, thank you for that. That's, again, quite unique. Public, private, and university partnerships, which is quite unique what this country has put together for this project. Thank you, Miranda. Richard, over to you, and then I'll come back on just bring it all together. Please.
Thank you, Pietro. Honourable members and honourable chairs, very nice to be here. And I think Mirena gave a very, very good segue into this presentation. Objective 3 was the component of the proposal that went into WHO that really focused on sustainability. What was the country going to be doing when COVID wasn't a reality, and how were we going to make these facilities sustainable? And so this part of the proposal was really trying to harness the collective academic horsepower of South Africa to put an end-to-end research and development program together. So this was the schematic that was taken out of the actual proposal, and sorry, some of the formatting has changed around by putting it in here. But you can, if you look across the bottom, the number of different institutions that were involved in the initial application, some of you will recognize. If I was to just say the names of Tulio, D'Oliveira, and the genomic surveillance, well, that is the program that MRC, with DSI funding, has been funding since the very beginning. And the question is, well, why are we doing all the sequencing work and then everyone around the world is making vaccines based on data that we're presenting and not South Africa? So that was very much the early end. A lot of the immunogenicity work, I believe the parliamentary committee probably had presentations about the work that's been done at IRE and the work done at BIS with Penny Moore and Alex DeGaulle around about immunogenicity of different vaccines. Well, why is everyone else in the world getting the benefit of this research and not Africa? So this program is integrating some projects that were really funded by the MRC at that stage and then other groups who were looking to get into that space. As Pietro has already mentioned, the group of Patrick Abutnot and at AGTRU at BITS as being a pivotal component. If I just talk very briefly, the groups that CBER, which is bioprocess engineering optimization. The group at Stellenbosch is looking to make enzymes for their large scale manufacturing process. The group at Northwest looking to use the DSI preclinical facility, and the list kind of goes on. So this was the initial proposal that went in, and a couple of other groups have added to this. And there's also a parallel capacity development and training program that has been put in place, and I won't spend too much time. So this program really focuses on sequences in from the left and vaccines out from the right, and it is pretty disease agnostic. It could be COVID today, it could be hopefully TB tomorrow, or other diseases of Africa. We will get to that in a second. Next slide, please, Petra.
For some reason, I don't get a response. Frozen.
Can you maybe close it and open it up again? Thank you. So I don't think we have missed a slide. So really, objective 3 is looking at sustainability, and a couple of things around the sustainability. The photograph on the right-hand side is the South African Genomic Surveillance Network that I believe many of you members know about. Many of you probably, you see the MRC logo on there. This has been funded by the DSI initially from, and the MRC initially from day one. A lot of this work was, as again, being other people in the world were getting the benefit from that. So So essentially, from the mRNA component, we're looking at local disease priorities, but the real focus is Africa. And, you know, what diseases are we going to work on in Africa? Well, I think that there's two things we really need to be working on, diseases that this technology will work with, but also the disease burdens per region. And really, you know, looking at the innovation, Pietro mentioned the issues with some of the vaccines not really being applicable for Africa per se. That really all hinges around the formulation of the vaccine, the lipids that are included in the vaccines, and the mutations of the variants that are ongoing. So our goal is to really to look at second-generation vaccines that can be developed, not looking to copy what's been done, but actually looking to make ideally better vaccines that are more suitable for Africa. Next slide, please, Pietro. So what are the priorities? So there are the obvious priorities for South Africa, which would be TB, HIV, and malaria. There is some debate about whether mRNA technologies for a one jab of immunization for babies it will work for long-term coverage, because we are seeing today the a lot of breakthrough infections with a lot of these vaccine candidates that don't necessarily give potentially, you know, lifetime immunity, in some cases 1 year to 2 years, et cetera, et cetera. So what are we looking to do for other diseases of Africa? We're trying to overlay a couple of activities. Obviously, the South Africa priorities are very, very important, but other spokes in the technology transfer hub, you know, trying to overlay the diseases of Africa, and the picture on the right-hand side is just a snapshot from the Africa CDC, what they have described as the 22 priority pathogens of Africa. Not all of these will work with an mRNA-based vaccine that Pietro is talking about, but some will, and there is quite a lot of data out to show that some will. So diseases like West Nile, Rift Valley fever, chikungunya, Zika, Ebola, Marburg, these are kind of diseases that are very likely to work with mRNA-based vaccines. And I've written the name Bonnie Graham. Bonnie Graham is probably the leader, the man who brought mRNA vaccines to the world. He's just retired from the NIH, but he is advising us on this program. And he was very much the brains and the idea behind Moderna's vaccine before he retired. So he's a key part on the program. But our initial goal is to start TB and explore if an mRNA vaccine can be made for TB. And that program is actually started and is going on in the background while we're looking to develop our constructs for the vaccine. Next slide, please, Pietro. Pietro, do you want to take it from here? Do you want me to carry on?
No, let me take it from here. Thank you very much, Lisa. Setting that stage for long-term sustainability and also to ensure that this program addresses the burden of disease in low and middle-income countries. So in terms of what next, the hub is in full development of the first COVID-19 vaccine. The clinical development programs still need to be finalized. It's probably going to look at a booster application for the target product profile, but what are the next innovations that need to happen on this program to ensure that we improve the vaccine, but also that we have sustainability? So we have started a process that the MRC very, very much involved with to address cost of goods. And I think there is a slide that will indicate some of the agreements that we are at the moment negotiating to give us access to that those kind of technologies. We also have started to looking at short, medium, and long-term priorities for immunogenicity targets. And I have to share that it's been an interesting journey for us how open and how enthusiastic small biotech companies across the world are to work with this mRNA hub. The difficulty we had with the big pharma companies, the opposite is true in biotech companies, and we will build those relationships in time to come. Richard has already covered, you know, the HIV, malaria, and other targets for next generation vaccines. Key deliverables on this project, there are multiple parties involved. I think Maneni said earlier that coordinated by WHO Medicines Patent Pool. The role of the Medicines Patent Pool, very important intellectual property and funding. The mRNA platform technology is a fast-moving, attractive technology platform, which means that the intellectual property landscape is very complex, and the Medicines Patent Pool assists us with managing managing and monitoring that landscape, but also to advise us on to ensure that we have a freedom to operate. And then, of course, the funding component of this project. AfriGen, getting facilities ready, as I mentioned earlier, and fully developing the platform suitable to transfer both knowledge and technology and products to the spokes. BioVac, Morena mentioned earlier, very much ready to hit the ground running. BioVac has vast experience in vaccine supply and fill finish and drug substance production. Now mRNA would be a new platform that will be added to the BioVac portfolio. And the MRC, Richard, has highlighted what the MRC's role is. Fantastic partnership. And this is the final thank you picture, the visit of the Director General, Dr. Tedros, and also there's some of our dignitaries, the parliamentarians here on this slide. This slide is from the consortium, the team, to thank the South African government for the tremendous support that we have received for this project, both in leadership, but also enabling. Thank you very much, Chair and Honourable Members.
Thanks very much, Petra. I think just to wrap up before I hand over to the chairperson, I think for the success of this initiative, there's a number of things that we are going to need to do. One of them is the matters relating to intellectual property, where we are, in order to progress with things, going to need to have so-called freedom to operate. You know, you don't want just to have products, but you also want to be able to sell them. And some of them have been covered under IP issues. But however, one of the challenges we are going to have to deal with is in relation to our own IP registration system under the CIPIC. We've got a system that is not rigorous, which basically just register IP without doing what you call examination. So as a result of that, we have got some of the very broad claims on IP that have been registered in South Africa, which we need to either work to revoke or to negotiate otherwise. And these are aspects of the IP that have been rejected in other countries, but because we don't do examination in South Africa, we have actually registered them. So we need to find a way of getting that revocation going on. But also we're looking at various aspects in terms of just negotiating partnerships as well to enable this. The last issue I want to raise is very important, is that we need to be able to, as a country and as a continent, to purchase our own vaccines. So in other words, it doesn't make sense that as we're working to build vaccine manufacturing capabilities in South Africa and in the continent, that we have our health department, or you know, whether it is nationally, regionally, or elsewhere, not buying the vaccines that are produced locally. That's going to be very problematic, because ultimately that means that we are killing the very same capabilities that we are building. So if you look everywhere in the world where companies that manufacture vaccines have been succeeded, it has been on the basis of the support they get, firstly from their own countries, from their own regions, and then also being able to, even if your vaccines are being bought by your own, then it also creates a level of confidence. So we are hoping that as it goes on, that when we have a vaccines that are manufactured locally, whether it is here for COVID or whether it is for tuberculosis, malaria, and HIV, that we will be the first to line up to buy vaccines from our own. So I really just wanted to highlight that and to say that we want to continue for this program to thank the support that we're receiving globally, whether it's from the World Health Organization, the Medicines Patent Pool, who are really at the center of driving this, our own ecosystem, universities, local companies, and also the support from government, of course, with the leadership starting from the president, because we're spearheading the success of this initiative. So I just want to say those words and head over to Chairperson, we would be more than happy to be directed to you in terms of how to proceed from here. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Mwafe, and to the entire team from the different entities that are working on this project. We really appreciate the what you Honorable Ishmael, Honorable Gela, Honorable Jacobs, Honorable Mackesy, Honorable Chirwa, Honorable Bosho. Yeah, it's very clear that we have colleagues from health this morning, because all their hands have gone up first. And one really is excited to learn from colleagues from the other portfolio as well. Honorable Munyai, you may go ahead.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, esteemed Honorable Chair, Honorable Mukacha. I will appreciate that if you may also, through your permission, if we may have better presentation before health, of course, through your guidance and support, that would be very much helpful on the portfolio committee on health. That's the request we're making further, because we want, I'm raising this issue because I will also firstly second Honorable Chair to make it possible that we receive all the documentation that has been presented before us, regardless of how short, or including the recording if it is possible, so that we can also go deep from the, because I didn't receive any documentation of the every presenter before us, before they present. That's the first request I'm requesting. The other appreciation is the presentation from your committee. I think the science and technology, I think that has been very helpful to note. The first question that I want to ask is that I've heard the list of countries that have been put forward. South Africa being part of the BRICS nation, why is it? I know Brazil is involved. Included, or is about to be included. Russia is not included. India is not included. China is not included. Is it because it's a developing country, but in science and technology, I'm sure they can be very competent to some of the countries from the West as well. That is the first political question I'm asking. The other critical issue I want to ask. Remember, there will be people, I'm sure it will be really genuine manufacturing. There are people who are refilling, who are packaging, and they claim that they're manufacturing, which we know that this RNA messenger technology is something that's coming from the Pfizer and other U.S. Products, Western countries' products. And is it true that this issue can impact on genetic sequencing or the corrupting of the DNA? That's the first question. The other critical issue I want to understand, because I know these are the some of the BRICS countries that I've mentioned, they don't have mRNA technology. That's not what they use to make their own vaccine. It's not like that. So I'm saying the genomic medicine, that's not what it is. But I want also to ask the question. There's been scientific
journals and develop this. I'm doing research on this one for the academic purposes, that the children who have been vaccinated in Europe, United States, they are having hepatitis. So this is I'm asking this question so that we can collectively contribute to the development of the body of knowledge. I'm saying these issues are on the market. Studies on this issue. If I can be clarified on these issues, whether it is something that science and technology may and CSR may want to pursue going forward. A last issue. I know already that the BioVac already partnered with Pfizer, and I saw the CEO for the platform, who was already speaking about this partnership and how excited he is to work with Pfizer, you know, addressing on the CMN. So if that's, what are the details of such a relationship, and how does that relate to this proposed project or the hub that needs to be set up within the continent? Lastly, I must say, Honorable Chair, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, this hub, how soon is going to be set up, and what are the preconditions of the agreement of the IT? Because I know the owners of the vaccine or the technology, they are very reluctant to issue the IT. And they said from the onset, when we have the engagement, beginning with the vaccine, that they're not going to share the IT in this regard. How true? Because I know even the packages or the batches that of the vaccine that Pfizer was distributing, the what goes to United States from vaccine was a different batch to what comes to Africa. Is it because there would have been any scientific indicator that Africa would require a certain type of vaccine or technology, if I could be clarified exactly that. I must say, Honorable Chair, I'm excited about the opportunity, but lastly, I'm really pleading that if we can receive some documentation to read, because now, you know, I'm trying to ask the person, based on the high-level presentation, some of the speakers would be trying to put forward. My view is that I would appreciate if the organization beyond the companies, scientific organs, because we have a lot of scientific institutions here in South Africa, state-owned and non-state-owned enterprises, to be also be involved, not to limit it to those who are engaged in the process. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable. I would like to believe that all presentation, the agenda, all the documents, so before we even continue, can I just have an indication from the Secretariat as to, you know, whether or not that happened, and if our members who have not received the immediate channel, can perhaps you please from how indicate if we received, if we send the documentation, please?
Yes, Chair, I have copied in when I sent to our members, the committee secretary on the portfolio committee on the house. So she's on the platform. Maybe she can just clarify why. Maybe I don't know how the distribution works in that committee. I didn't have all the names of the members, but I thought I'll just send it to the secretariat of that committee.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair. All presentations including the agenda were distributed. Thank you. They were distributed, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, colleague. I see Honorable Wilson also said that yes, please, that would be appreciated. I think that was in response to the documents, the presentation. So can we just follow up really kindly? The members had challenges. All right, so thank you so much. The next member is then Honorable Ishmael.
I just would like to say good morning and thank you for your very thorough and interesting presentation. I just want to put a record that I did receive the presentation via email from our secretary. I just have a few questions. I'm not sure if I'm asking too much very soon. However, if you will indulge me. So my first question, there has been side effects of COVID-19, you know, that has been in the media for a long time. The common side effects of Pfizer and Moderna, for example, were kidney inflammation, renal disorders, you know, mental disorders, allergies. Now, how will you mitigate the side effects and negative impacts of vaccines at production level? My second question, what have you learned from the Sisonke trials that can be used as a learning curve when developing vaccines and, you know, implementation of trials? And what will be changed in the process? My third question, how long will it take after the training process for a vaccine to be produced? You know, looking at the Johnson & Johnson and Pfizer boosters as we had in this country, these were actually trials. Now, how long does it actually take to confirm a trial to be an established vaccine? My fourth question, the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, has demonstrated that vaccines can actually be developed in a very quick time and brought to the market. But we find that, you know, diseases such as TB and HIV and malaria and all those that are stated in your presentation, you know, still require significant investment to develop viable vaccines. Now, can you perhaps advise how long will it take to produce a vaccine for TB and HIV that is, you know, more needed in this country right now to eliminate these two diseases? My fourth question. What challenges do you envisage in scaling up vaccine development going forward, if any? And considering the current hesitancy, you know, vaccine hesitancy in the country, how do you envisage to scale up these trials that we're talking about right now? And my last question, you know, where does SAHPRA, is the our regulatory body of South Africa, actually fit into this? You know, we know when Pfizer and Johnson & Johnson or any other medication or any other method that has really or going to be used in the country, obviously has to go through SAHPRA, and this sometimes takes a process. So where does SAHPRA fit into all this, and where's the beginning discussion, and how long will this process actually take for these trials to actually take place in this country? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Ishmael, Honorable Gela.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also welcome the presentation. I must say, indeed, it's a good presentation, a good initiative. Chairperson, I must also confirm that I've received the document. It was sent to us by Ms. Majalamba. But also, Chair, I've got only one question. Because my colleagues have already asked some questions, but I want to check, Chairperson, whether do they have enough space to keep this vaccine? Because currently I know that we are using J&J and Pfizer, and they have a space for their vaccine. So if I can just get that, Chairperson, but it is a initiative forward as for that. We still have this virus in the country, and it will take long time to finish the trial, Chairperson. That will be my contribution in terms of this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Gela. Honorable Jacobs.
Thank you, Chairperson, and once again, thank you for calling this Joint Portfolio Committee. As I have said earlier, we've
quite surprised at the Portfolio Committee on Health at that time. It was about March when we had read in the media all of this was happening and we weren't really introduced to this in the beginning. But be that as it may, any opportunity is a good opportunity. So this is where we would also want to start having engagements with the Department of Science and Innovation through you and with the BioVac African University collaboration, SAMRC collaboration, as the Portfolio Committee on Health. Secondly, yes, just to confirm that we had received the presentation yesterday at about 10:24. And I think most of the colleagues have corrected that what was said. Then I must congratulate AFSA South Africa and those who are working on this vaccine technology development in South Africa, that we are actually the hub of all of this, and I've already mentioned the stakeholders that we know being Afrigen, BioVac, our different universities, African Medical Research Council, and also noting what was stated that the regardless of the lack of the technology transfer, we were able to develop what we have at the moment, and maybe the question would be, you know, where in that cycle are we now exactly, from the greenfield to actually having a product at the end of the day. I know there's also a challenge that's been put in the media and even by the president about the purchase of vaccines from our institute, let's call it an institute, you'll probably be able to give us a name for that too. But the purchase of the vaccines which we produce by the other countries, I think that with red is a real challenge at the moment, and I would also imagine a lot of money had gone into producing or setting up what has been set up. And I know that the site is actually at the University of Stellenbosch at the Tigerberg Medical Campus, and you know, it's also wonderful to see technology, new technology being for the first time brought onto the shores of Africa. But I guess what we're also reading out of this is that this is only the beginning, looking at the COVID vaccine and then moving from there to the other diseases. Of course, I noticed in the first presentation a lot of the diseases which are up in Africa, like Ebola, Rift Valley fever, dengue fever. I'm sure I saw some of those names in the presentation. But closer to home, they would also talk of closer to home, HIV. As you know, we have a lot of HIV, malaria, etc. So it's quite exciting. We wish everybody well with what they are doing. And it's a brand new innovation on the shores of Africa. And you know, especially developing our own ecosystem, and that, yeah, I've asked only one question, the two questions actually, and if I could maybe answer those questions. But once again, thank you very much, and we would want to, as put by some of the members, engage again as the Portfolio Committee on Health. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Jacob. I must really say, Honourable Members, it's so exciting having colleagues from health in the meeting. I think that the nature of the questions are they really help for us to have a broader perspective on the technology and its capacity. I think I really want to just indicate that I'm really appreciating the what colleagues from health are sharing in the meeting. Honourable Makesi.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to, first of all, just to say thank you for the presentation. I think this is a very exciting development, and also to see Africa taking part in producing vaccines.
specifically the mRNA vaccine. I think it's something that we can celebrate, and I just want to say congratulations to everyone that is going to be taking part in this. I think my questions are basically on the concerns that have been brought in terms of the efficacy of mRNA, specifically on the COVID-19 vaccine. I think everybody knows we have been, you know, we all embarked into the biggest clinical trial the world has ever undergone. And the problem with this is the fact that, you know, there is no pharmacovigilance, which would normally be seen when you're having a small group when you're doing a clinical trial. So that actually poses problems whereby, you know, the problems that we're seeing whereby people are reluctant to take part and to be vaccinated. So I just want to find out, because when we started with, the vaccination, we're told that 90% is going to give us 90% protection, which is relative to the placebo, which is obviously is not absolute. But after 2 months of experiencing, then it was found out that its effectiveness is actually at 0.84%, and that comes from the Lancet journal, which they conducted on their Swedish population. I just want to find out if we can have more clarity on that. And also, the people who were vaccinated have become more ill as compared to those that were not vaccinated. I think that that has been brought up by the fact that, you know, the immune, they talk about the IgG and the IgA, that what happens is that when you get vaccinated, your IgA after a couple of months, it literally drops, therefore making you more to be susceptible to getting the COVID-19. Not that obviously you die out of that, but you are more likely to get sick than the people that that were exposed to COVID-19. So I would like to get more clarity about that, and those are things that make people to be kind of like, you know, reluctant to try, that I can understand, to be reluctant to take the virus, to take the vaccine. And I think the issue of, the reverse transcription, I think it was kind of mentioned whereby, you know, because we're talking about an mRNA genome, that it has been suspected that there's a reverse transcription that occurs in the organs, specifically in the liver. And if maybe we can maybe have clarity if that is something that you, involved in research, are concerned about, and if we have actually looked at that analysis to see that if that occurs, and people who have participated in this clinical trial, we need to find out if that is something that that we should be concerned about. And also, because of there's also the issue that that was brought again. I think it was the New England Journal of Medicine that mentioned that the vaccine, this type of vaccine, it actually lowers your immune defense, and then can actually make you to be more susceptible to other diseases. Is it something that you are looking at? As much as it's exciting for us to be part of this technology, how far are we, taking it to making sure that the efficacy, I think, that which is the most concerning issue, that it is tackled, whether it is for COVID or even if you do embark on the TB vaccination, are you gonna, pursue that? From my understanding, from the presentation that we got, is that you are not only going to be looking at the mRNA, like in terms of the COVID vaccination, but you are going to pursue other studies. So that means, like, you are going to be more exposed to information that can be able to assist and share more light in terms of the side effects that that have been observed. So I would presume that there would be more pharmacovigilance. Maybe you go for more smaller groups when you're doing clinical trials and be more open about it, because I think the fact that, you know, we are not getting any information, or the information is not widely spread in terms of, you know, the performance of the COVID vaccine, is something of concern, because that means that people are in the dark. And what we are seeing as well is the fact that now, not only we have moved from the booster, which is the third dose, we are going on the fourth and the fifth dose, and which actually shows that, you know, what we were told before, that the efficacy is 95% protection, then is actually not accurate and not true. So, and also my final question will be on the, if you are exposed to COVID, they say that today your IgA and your IgG compared to those that have been vaccinated is actually higher in terms of protection, because normally when you have with other vaccines that we've had before, the efficacy of the vaccine is at least 50%. But now with this mRNA, it looks like it actually dropped below the 50%. I think that is the biggest concern I think that many people are having. So in that sense, like if you have been just exposed to COVID, and the person that was not, that only exposed to the vaccine, how is their protection in terms of COVID-19? I don't know if you'll be able to give us that analogy, and specifically on the IgG and the IgA, like what will we be looking at? Because if they say that the IgA is lost after a couple of months, that you basically lose that kind of protection, then what does it mean when you have been just exposed to the COVID, to actually the COVID-19? How will that be like in terms of protection? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mukasey. Honorable Chira.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to all the people who are presenting today, and good morning to everybody else. Pardon?
No, I think there may be a delay in my network.
All right. Can I continue?
So I was not hearing you. Go ahead. But can I go ahead? We can.
All right.
Yeah, we can hear you.
All right. Thank you. I think I want to ask to the presenters and the stakeholders that are represented in this meeting, why the insistence on the mRNA technology, or rather the limitation to mRNA technology in this particular project. I'd just like to get the reasons behind that particular decision. And secondly, can we get a list of all the stakeholders that are participating in this project? I am asking this also because we've been hearing a lot of things. I think some of the speakers, the MPs before me raised this particular issue. Some of us having seen, the presentation of Pfizer making mention of this project and their participation and their excitement. So can we get like a clear and distinct list of all the stakeholders that are participating, both in government and in the private sector, and those obviously who are in between, like BioVac. And number three, I would like to know what SAPTA's role is in this project, and if there's other entities, and not limited within the NGOH, but if there's other entities, even externally, that are participating in this, and also in what capacity they are doing this in. And the cost of this project,
how much are we dealing with? How much are we looking at? I'm asking this particular thing because we have to weigh it in contrast to demand as well, especially noting the fact that the uptake of the vaccine currently in the country is very low because the country study or the government, the NDOH, together with the Minister of Health, did not invest in proper education of vaccines. And we're not transparent in answering people's questions. And in relation to this particular question as well, I would really like that you answer the previous speaker's questions as well, because those are some of the things that prevent people, that make vaccine hesitancy to rise, because some of these questions are always dodged, or we are told, or people are told, you know, to just keep it moving and get their jab, and that's not going to be the case. And that's the reason why that the uptake of vaccines in amongst the youth, amongst young people, is very low, because we have literally abandoned the ball on education. And education is a primary tenet of the youth, primary health care and prevention. You can't prevent what you don't know. You can't prevent, or you can't cure what you don't know, since we are living in a curative system in the country, sadly. And who are the funders of this project? This particular question I'm asking because in one of the presentations we got from SAPRA in the Portfolio Committee of Health, they made mention of a project that they are participating in with the FDA in the USA, and that they were stakeholders in the particular project. But when you looked that up with your own personal research, the USA or the FDA doesn't note SAPRA as a participant or as a stakeholder. They note them as a funder, which is sad news then, because then we get all these complaints about funding and all of that, but they have the capacity or the money to take to the USA to fund their science project and then come burden us with complaints when... or rather are under the impression that they are stakeholders, when the West doesn't see them as that. They see them as people to milk money from. And I link this question with the first few questions I think I asked about stakeholders as well. Who owns the rights to this project that's going to happen here? Are we also going through another process of just being the assemblers of a product? I know you made mention of, you know, the technology that's being innovated together with the food bears and all of those things, but I want to know who owns the rights to this project that is under discussion now. And lastly, what level of integration with higher education should we expect for this project? Are you just going to be using their sites for research purposes? Who are the people that are going to be involved in this? Who are the people that are involved in this research process? I think that is all. Thank you very much, Shepherd.
Thank you,
Ms.
Thank you, Honorable Tira. Honorable Lucille.
All right. No, thank you very much. I was giving myself because I thought maybe you have a network challenges. Thank you very much. Good morning to everybody, our colleagues in that project, our colleagues from DSI, honorable members. Tate Monyai and the chair, Dr. Jacobs, and all colleagues from the health side of things. Chair, it's not really a question, it's a complaint, really, to Dr. Mope and the team, because we've had numerous engagements with them, and they would have complained almost every time that when you ask them, what are the challenges? What are you experiencing as challenges and how can we help? And they would have indicated, Chair, that their biggest challenge or biggest challenges are money related, funding for such projects. And they've not said anything. We did indicate that we're going to join a series of, we're going to hold a series of joint meetings with committees where, you know, there's a linkage their linkages. And today we're having this meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Health, and they've not said anything about having funding problems. So it's a complaint to them, and they must clarify that part. They must, well, I thought they will take this opportunity today to highlight that part, that we do have a funding challenges on 1, 2, and 3, and we believe that as colleagues, we can, you know, jointly pull strings, making sure that these things, you know, are addressed. So it's a complaint, not a question. I think, Chair, we've had meetings with them, and I think really I do not have any questions on what they're doing currently that has not been answered before the committee. Thank you very much.
Confused me entirely. I want to say it's a little bit like being in the children's church, that when you are the first one to pray, everything that can be prayed for has been prayed by somebody else. So I would only limit myself to welcoming the presentation and to say that it is really impressive and heartening to see what abilities are available in South Africa, and that the science and innovation ecosystem is really functional and more than functional, world-class. So one has one's either doubts or reservations because of what people say, and not all those people are, let me say, non-scientists. But I think that other honourable members covered that, and I should maybe just add that a sister of mine had colon cancer, and she was part of a trial mRNA treatment for that, and it has kept her clean from the cancer for several years now, I think 6 years already. So I have a starting point as my starting point. I have a very firm trust that the technology is really, onto something essential and vital. So one would actually, in that sense, like confirmation, and as a non-technical person in medical area, one would like to have answers to give people who are skeptical and hesitant to adopt the technology. So that would be all from my side. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Borschulf and Honourable Members. I really would have wanted to show my face at this point, but I don't know what's happening with my Wi-Fi, so I've had to move on to my phone. Therefore that becomes a bit challenging. So I want to apologize for that. I think from my side, of course, we want to appreciate the presentation. And also register perhaps some of the concerns that have come from the department. Mr. Mosley speaks about freedom to operate, us being able to create a conducive environment for that, you know, for the produced products, well, for these products to be produced locally and to be, you know, sold as well. He also raises concerns around the IP registration system not being rigorous enough. And this is work that we note as a committee, as an area where we can, you know, be a motive force to assist the department in that regard. If I were to just ask just one or two questions, in terms of the, well, firstly, I think the work is, you know, I really must indicate that it always excites me when Africa showcases it. And in this work that we're trying to do in building our, I think it speaks to us attempting to build our independence. It speaks to, you know, strengthening our sovereignty as a country. And even in the work that we may want to do, the collaborative work that we may want to do in other countries, with other countries, I cannot stress enough the importance for us to always bear in mind sovereignty, our country, and whatever information sharing that takes place. Because, you know, other countries are just as selfish in terms of that. So, you know, so I think we must indicate that firstly. But of course, stress on how exciting it is. But also, Mr. Mwasa, you know, and Honorable Bosho, you know, was saying yesterday to us during the presentation of the committee report that there's a possibility that we prioritize transformation and quality. And I want to say that is a definite no. That is an absolute no. When we speak of transformation, honorable members, it cannot be synonymous to a decay, therefore, in capacity. And that is why we are saying we must be an investment in ensuring that there must be an investment in education to ensure that we're able to change the makeup of the science and innovation system, right? And we can't be apologetic about that. It has to be transformed. It has to look like Africa. If we are saying we want these vaccines to be able to respond to the African context, to the climate, to whatever it may be, then why don't we want the researchers and those contributing to this particular space to look like the country, the continent that they come from? So, and then we want to argue that there's a possibility of the quality, you know, being degenerating. But I think it's very problematic for us to argue in that nature. And I want to caution us from that, right? So we are going to ask, Honorable Chiwa requests that we indicate, you know, all the stakeholders that are part of this process. I appreciate that we further give a synopsis of the team, Dr. Murphy, on the teams that are working on this. We once asked colleagues at SAO, it's SAO, right? Yeah. I think it was 2019, if I'm not mistaken, or could have been early 2020, when Honorable Mapulani, when we went there physically, colleagues will assist me, will remind me, we asked and we said, okay, you know, it's really exciting the work that you want to do in terms of, you know, optical astronomy in the country, but we can't lie and say it's weird that the person who's heading this particular project is not South African. It's a bit uncomfortable. And colleagues did not take offense. And it was so refreshing and exciting when we went back now, when we went to the Sutherland, yeah. And colleagues were able to say, look, this is, these are the strides we're making. This is a succession plan that we have. To ensure that, you know, at some point, this organization is not led by but to ensure that at some point this organization is led by a South African. Of course, as young Black women, we are biased to even saying led by a young Black South African woman. That is what we aspire for, and we're not going to be apologetic about that, right? So we must also get to a point where it does not, those of us who are at the helm of privilege are not discomfited by conversations of transformation, but ensure that, you know, there is this particular capacity that we want to speak of when we move towards transformation. So I want to then say, Mr. Mwase, we would like a breakdown of all the teams that are working on this project to ensure that there is intersectionality and inclusive in this amazing work that we are doing as a department together with the various entities that are here, right? So that's one thing I wanted to speak to. And then we're glad to hear that, you know, colleagues are really working in ensuring that we use local expertise and that transfer of knowledge in, you know, small things that require hard skills. We need to make sure that we work with the various TV colleges, the various universities of technology in assembling some infrastructure and technology that is used. Colleagues have asked other questions about the relationship that takes place with universities and how that particular relationship looks like. So we look forward to hearing to your responses. Then just also with regards to the backup power that you're using, as we think of alternative energy, maybe colleagues can bring us into understanding on whether or not you considered using fuel cells or solar to back up your power and the work that you're doing. We're also glad that, of course, the scope of the work that you were doing in terms of the vaccine that we want to produce. How to interact further with the DSI, colleagues are more than welcome to. These departments, not belong to the committees that they immediately report to only. They are departments for all of us to work with in order for us to break the silos that exist within government. So colleagues are more than welcome to, of course, it would be great, of course, if we continue liaising, breakdown on that side. I do think, Shanaz, and to the committee secretary from House, Ms. Buyogazi, that we do need to see, when we can go to this location physically in Montague Garden. It would be nice to for me, I always feel colleagues seeing calling of board. I don't know how to translate it, into English, but calling of board. We believe by seeing. I don't know if it even sounds right, but it's always very important for us to go and see the work that is being done. So I really think we need to see Honourable Jacobs between the schedules of your committee and ours when we can go to this site in Montague Gardens in Cape Town, where we can see the work that is therefore being done there. I just want to check. Yeah, I think I will leave it at. Also, maybe. There we go. Thank you so much. I was really looking for that term, but it was coming out. It was coming across it in vernacular. Thank you, Mr. Morenadio. So if the listeners bring us into understanding of what could inform the hesitancy in the market to purchase these locally produced vaccines, and what do they think can be done, and how can
Recording in progress.
And I'll probably touch on some of it, especially because, just to give a little bit of context, it's not in all instances that your immunity will stay where it is. That is why, for example, on diseases such as flu, you get vaccinated every year because your efficacy basically disappears over a couple of months. So, but I'm going to leave this to Dr. Gordon to take us through. Honorable Chirwa, the issue of why the insistence on mRNA, I'll probably deal with that. The list of stakeholders, I'll touch on that. And again, colleagues will also come in to add. Subclass role, I'll probably we'll deal with that as well. And then colleagues will come in. And then the issue around the questions that Honorable Chirwa said they are being dodged. The bulk of the questions that, that have been referred to are probably questions around the side effects and the issue of efficacy. And again, I would say that while we'll probably be able to answer some of that, but again, this is the way that, for example, the Vaccine Ministerial Advisory Committee deals with in terms of advising the Minister of Health in terms of what are the studies that we are doing scientifically to really validate or even in some instances, prove some of the claims wrong. But we'll probably, as much as we have the information side, address that. Who are the funders? We'll probably address that as well. And that will be shared between myself and the university colleagues. And whether we are the assemblers of products or not, I'll also deal with that. And the integration with higher education. Honorable Ithier will address the issue of the funding. And also the I think there was mentioned there of the IP. We take note of Honorable Boshoff's comments. Honorable Mkatra, you have mentioned the issues of IP, which I think is quite important. That's where I think interventions will be quite important, especially so far as just boosting our own IP registration system. The team that are working with this, I will share with you. And then some of the information around the teams we will be able to provide with you here, but probably able to deal with it. Issues of skill development, we'll mention that. You've also mentioned the point of transformation, which is very important. I'll also address that. And then the hesitancy in terms of procuring local products. So we'll deal with it. So I'm going to start, and I'm going to hand over to the colleagues that I mentioned them. They will take the questions. Firstly, let me really again appreciate the nature of engagement we had from the committee members on this one. Starting with Honorable Munyai, why are countries such as Russia, India, and China not part of it? The thing is that in order to be the host of the hub, or in order for you to be the spoke, this was based on what we call the expression of interest. So you had to really apply that you want to be the host. So there are those who applied who didn't get it, and there are those who didn't apply, So in this instance, South Africa was one of the applicants. We were the successful one to host the hub. But then there are the spoke applicants. So in terms of the spokes, I can indicate that even on the presentation here, India is one of the countries that whose company has been identified. But we also need to acknowledge that the bulk of the countries that chose not to apply, they already have their own manufacturing capability. So it's basically more like if you've got capacity to do something, you would not necessarily want to say, I'm raising my hand for you to come and build my capacity because we have it. So that is why you find that in terms of the countries we are having, those low and middle income countries who either don't have capacity or who felt that they would need to have capacity to do the mRNA technology. For example, India has got manufacturing capability for all sorts of vaccines, but there are some companies who want to get the mRNA capability. And in the same instance, I think it's important to note that even the likes of Pfizer, they actually don't have their own technology around these, but they are actually using biotech mRNA technology for this process. So the bulk of the questions that were raised by Honorable Nyai would then be dealt with, as I said, by Mr. Gordon. I will hand you the opportunity. I will also deal with the issues of where does SAPRA fit in. Now, SAPRA is supposed to be one of the beneficiaries in terms of having their capacity to do regulation things. Now, there is a certain level of capacitation that you require for you to be able to do certain things. And this is really what this part of this project to happen. But SAPRA cannot be involved in the actual development of vaccines or drugs because they are the regulators. However, just like most of the regulators in developing countries or in low and middle-income countries, their capacity needs to be developed. That is why, to ensure the success of this project, capacities of the likes of SAPRA have to be strengthened so that when these countries develop their vaccines, SAPRA will not then be able to say, well, we are still building our capacity to regulate this particular issue. So that is really where SAPRA is. So the issue of the question that was raised by Honorable Jacobs, I said, and those who were dealt with by Petro. Honorable Machesi, your questions, as indicated, Dr. Gordon will deal with them. I'm going to tackle a couple of questions that have been raised by Honorable Chigwa. And the first question is, why are we insisting on the mRNA vaccine? So this initiative is about mRNA vaccine. That is why it's called the mRNA Technology Transfer Hub. In South Africa, we are looking at a number of other technologies, for example, the activated viral vaccines, protein subunits. However, they will not be dealt with through this project. So there will be other projects that are going to be looking at other technologies. This technology was called on for a number of reasons. One, because this is the technology that is proven that it can actually be used as a platform to go beyond COVID, because we do realize that it may not necessarily make sense to invest on developing capacity just looking at one vaccine. So that's why this platform is preferable. And but we cannot, in this mRNA technology transfer platform, begin to use other platforms because the technology platform is complicated. The list of stakeholders, as I said, we will be able to provide that. But the main stakeholders to date that I can mention is that this project really came out of the concerns from COVID, where the World Health Organization was worried that we are seeing when vaccines are coming out that the low and middle income countries are at the back of the queue. And there was no effort in terms of looking at various multilateral setups that were giving us the necessary choice in terms of making sure that the distribution of vaccines are prioritized. That's why the World Health Organization, working in the Mexican pool, decided this will really be the option to say, how do we get a program that will make sure that low and middle income countries can develop their own capabilities so that if there is another outbreak or if this outbreak continues, that we don't have shortage of vaccines because they are firstly being distributed to a country where they are being manufactured, which in some cases makes sense. If you are manufacturing vaccines in your own backyard, you probably would have to firstly prioritize your own. And therefore, we needed to build our own capability, even though we know that this was overdone and come to the target more than what they needed. But ultimately, this was the origin through World Health Organization and the Medicine Patent Pool. And of course, there were a number of governments who supported it, including South Africa, the French government, the German government, and so on and so forth. I have answered the question, Honorable Chigwa, on the problem of SAPRA. And we will also, in terms of the funding, now, since this project started, there were a number of commitments that were made. Firstly, the reason why South Africa was chosen as a host is because South Africa has already invested in building school capability. There is a slide that Petro spoke to, which looks at what we have done in the area of genomics, what we have done in the area of clinical trials, and the experience that we had in student finishing. So that capability in itself, which was part of the investment by South Africa, was the magnet that attracted the project. And in order to actually get this thing off the ground, of course, the funding of science and innovation did provide some funding. Some funding is coming from the medical Africa. But the World Health Organization, the MPP, has also been leading efforts to raise funds globally to support this initiative. It probably also answers the questions why, Honorable, here we haven't complained about funding for this initiative, because so far we are still progressing with whatever is being available. And this support is coming in different ways. Some of it is in kind in the sense that we've got technical support and then also help in building the facilities and the equipment. And which, as Petra has said, this equipment becomes an asset for the country, because going forward, it becomes our own asset to begin to continue to build our own manufacturing capabilities. Are we going to be assemblers of products? No. We are developing, as you recall, the slide that was presented by Dr. Petro. Talking from genomics, the sequencing, basically that's where you say if there is an outbreak of a disease, you identify the pathogen, you then do the sequencing of the DNA or RNA, and you start from there and you work towards developing, understanding how it operates, and then developing the vaccine. So this project is about development. That's why we are also talking about second generation vaccines, which vaccines will be suited for our own context as low and middle income countries. So the integration with higher education, you probably hear when this point are talking about the institutions that are involved, that the ecosystem that Dr. Morena mentioned, it means that for you to have a successful vaccine manufacturing ecosystem, you need to have your higher education system. That is where the bulk of your research is done. You need to have your science system, which is the science center or cancer, which is the life of the MRC, the CSIR. And in some instances, when you get to start to get broader, the role that your ARC could play. So that's basically an integration of all. And I think we were aware that Dr. Gordon used to say, we are using all South African horsepower. So whether it is your higher education institutions, society council, your government support, those, and also including the private sector, the life of private enough. So those are all in the pot making sure that it's content. I have addressed the question by Honorable Lucia around funding. I noted the comment, and let me go to the point that Honorable Chair has been made. One around the issue of transformation. Transformation is very crucial in all that we do and what we have done. And even if it means that in the beginning, we are going to start, as you might have indicated, in some projects with people who are not South Africans leading the project, we are going to do that, but with a goal to say, over the period of so many years, we will be beginning to have our own people. And we have demonstrated that we can do that through HINSA, when we started with all foreign researchers, but now today we do that locally. So in this instance, the good thing is that the bulk of the people that are doing the program are our own local scientists. Now, in terms of transformation, that is quite crucial. You already know that we have done a lot of investigation, for example, on one aspect of the gene chain, which is the genomic sequencing, and the people that are involved there. So you know some of the safety, and as I said, we'll provide it. We'll also provide the safety of all the other people that are involved in us in other parts of the gene chain. However, what is critical is the capacity building program in this age. One, we have already gotten a sense of what are the skills that we require, because it is important that we now begin looking for, say, we are going to need lab technicians, we are going to need genomic sequencers, we are going to need the actual people who are going to be developing the vaccine in her service. In that area, we know that South Africa is quite advanced as most some of the vaccines that are in the market in clinical here. So we are not ashamed about our commitment to the vaccine. In our view, it hasn't led to any compromise of quality. So I'm going to now hand over to Professor Richard Gordon to read some of the questions that I've highlighted. And then from there, when we're done, Richard, I'm going to hand over to Dr. Pedro, Pedro Del Branch, and then we'll see what other questions are there. Richard?
Thank you, Mbeleni. So Honourable Committee, I wrote down a lot of questions and had answers for them, and then I got assigned my questions. So I'm not going to link it to specific names, if that's okay, but I'm going to cover a couple of themes that came through. Just on the capacity development side, the MRC is doing a capacity development program looking at filling some of those gaps. Also to, related to this, the announcement of a scholarship program with Patrick Soon-Shiong about training scientists to build a cohort of researchers coming through, and this is targeting all the way from school through to University of Venda, to UZulu, to Wells Forte, a lot of the what we would typically classify historic disability institutions, really trying to build a cohort of research scientists. So that's one very exciting development, which I just triggered to by Benini's comments. In relation to the question around side effects, vaccine efficacy, the IgA, IgM, IgG, related to the question in the panel about why have we not reached herd immunity with COVID. I think it's important to recognize that, COVID, typically, if you went back 5 years ago, coronavirus isn't a new virus. It's been around a long time. It's just this variant that we have seen from the Wuhan strain was novel. It hadn't been seen by the immune system. But typically, COVID caused common colds and runny noses, scratched throats. If you went back through the last 100 years, I think there's been 5 or 6 COVID pandemics, but nothing to this kind of magnitude. And the thing about COVID is it mutates quite quickly. Which the old mantra is that, you can't get a vaccine for a common cold because it mutates so quickly. So the questions around IgA, IgG, IgM really relate to the quick and the ease to which the COVID mutates. So immunity does wane after a couple of months, and that is just a symptom of the kind of a pathogen, which is why we get colds every other year because the same virus. So that is not unusual in that respect, in that we lose immunity after a couple of months. But again, I'm not an immunologist by expertise, but that is certainly what is seen. And the fact you will see through the genomic surveillance program in South Africa, you will see just in South Africa alone how many mutants, how many variants there are. So to expect one vaccine to be able to cover it going forward is probably unlikely, and probably in the sense that are we going to see in COVID what we see in flu, what Benelli says, we get an annual booster for COVID. So in terms of the durability of vaccines, it looks likely why some countries are going to the third or fourth or fifth jabs. It is because you get relatively short-term durability for some of these diseases. But that does create an opportunity as well, where COVID seems that the mRNA-based platforms are ideal for what we call pandemics, is because they are versatile platforms, quickly make new constructs. Related to the question around efficacy waning and long-term and the side effects, I think Mnelli mentioned that is really a meeting to have with a VMAC, where you are collating at a national macroscopic level. It is very difficult to pick up side effects in small studies, small side arms. You really need large cohorts to pick up trends. Etc. But I would say that kind of discussion around the vaccine efficacy is probably the perfect role to have a discussion with the VMAC and the vaccine advisory committee. The question, I think the last question related to what was asked of me to answer, was related to the diseases and the applicability of mRNA. Some diseases are going to be more appropriate for mRNA-based technology. Diseases like TB that grow very slowly, and you seldom get variants. You get one sort of variant every kind of 6 months coming out. There could be specific applications for TB and special immunization programs that one could be running with in terms of with TB. Unlikely to be in a vaccination when you're a baby to have you for life, but could be seasonal vaccination, et cetera, that could be done with that. So I think the big attraction around COVID is an mRNA is the time scale. It does shorten the time scales, and one of the committee members, honorary member Bostoff, was talking about the application in cancer. That is what mRNA was actually really being focused to do, going on in the background, that it is quite an appropriate platform for these specific types of cancer. So that's, I will kind of stop there to say, toxic side effects, I think, is very much the remit of the VMAC, and vaccine efficacy. It's really a function between how quickly COVID mutates. That a vaccine that was developed a year ago may not work for the local variant today. What it does seem to be doing is, looking at the data, is it prevents hospitalization, if you look at the numbers at a macroscopic level. Minister McKissie, I can't really comment about the examples you've had where some people have been sicker in the second time around. I'm not sure how unique it is. I also know people who've had COVID once or twice and were sicker the second time around. But I think that might be... well, you know, everyone is different. Everyone's genetic makeup and immunogenicity is different, and I think people will respond in different ways. So I do think there are some outliers, but I believe in the main, I think that is unlikely to be the case for everyone. I think it's you will see a whole spectrum of severe trials. I'm going to stop there, and I'll hand back. I'll hand over. I think it was to Morena to talk about storage. You on the ecosystem.
Yes, Morena.
Thanks, and thanks for the questions. I'm just going to present one slide just to make maybe the committee members aware. Just to frame some of the issues that may be confused between, you know, Pfizer, what is Pfizer doing and what is the mRNA doing. But before I do that, I'd just like to maybe make the analogy, maybe just simplify for honorable members so that you can understand what is it that we're trying to do here. So I'd like to make an example of the motor car industry that I'm sure members would know, that we have Mercedes, Toyota, VW, where we are assembling, those are assembly plants locally, you know, in Gqeberha, in Pretoria, and in Durban. But the actual IP and the design of those BMWs, Toyota, and all of those things are done in the home countries, in Germany or Japan. We are assembling here, and then, you know, some of that gets to be retained and some of that gets to be exported. So I think if honorable members understand that analogy of cars, then I would like to move on to vaccines in terms of what BioVec has set up is, from a manufacturing perspective, over the years we have established what we typically refer as to fill finish. So where we get the raw material from overseas, from other players, we then fill it into these small vials, we pack and label. So similar, if I can make the example with the assembly, of cars. But what it does mean is that we are not having the IP and the know-how in the manufacture of those raw materials. Much like BMW keeps it in Germany and Toyota keeps that in Japan, but we just do the assembly. So BioVec arrangement with Pfizer. So BioVec has a relationship with Pfizer that predates the COVID-19 pandemic. So this is a second relationship that we are having, and what we are doing is for finish on the Pfizer vaccine. This is not related to the hub. This is a BioVec Pfizer relationship. And why are we doing that? And why this is important, and as I try and reflect my slide here, this is very important, honorable members, because it's important that we get to squeeze and get to have the know-how from those that are already ahead of us. So what you're seeing on this slide is that we have the normal development path, right from development up to distribution. And so what we need to do in terms of capacity, we need capacity across all of those levers up there, you know, in terms of development, breakfasters, and all of those. So essentially, if you split it into these three blocks, is that the mRNA hub is really, that's where the development, that's where the IP is. That Pfizer wouldn't give us or anybody in the country. That they will keep overseas. Okay, that's the manufacture of the raw material and the IP. They won't share that. Which is why the mRNA hub initiative is so important, because then at least that can be developed here. However, when we come to things like manufacturing to fill finish, if they are giving and they want to give it to us, why should we say no? Because let's learn from them in terms of how to handle mRNA vaccines from a formulation to fill finish, so that when the hub's product is ready, then BioVac would at least have some experience from the Pfizer experience. So that is how the two relate, in that we need to squeeze and suck as much as we can from the likes of Pfizer in terms of formulation for finish. But because they won't share with us, you know, the upstream, what we call the upstream side, this is why this initiative is so important. So I just wanted to put that in context. The last part, before I hand over to Pedro, is that honorable members may know that BioVac is also involved in the distribution of COVID-19 vaccines. Now, we handle the Pfizer product, the minor severe degree handling product, which was new to us in the country. We're handling the J&J product, the minor severe product, and then we all handle normal vaccines, which is under 2 to 8 years. So essentially, what the picture that I'm trying to put here is that we need to develop the capability even downstream, so that once Afrigen and the team have developed their product, that hopefully will be thermal stable. But if for whatever reason, it needs to be handled in minor severity, or it needs to be handled in minor speed, or any other, then we have in our ecosystem, we then have the capability to formulate, fill, and pack. And if we need to freeze it, we may need to freeze it. But that capability would be there rather than focusing on the upstream and saying, okay, you know, we will navigate the space as we go downstream. So the capability that BioVac is building downstream with other partners will serve the hub once the hub's product is ready. So I think that is, I hope I have answered the questions, Bonini, that were tailored to what was. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Morena. Petra?
Thank you very much, colleagues and honorable members. The extent and the intent of the questions really demonstrate how important this project is, and I thank everybody for those. I'm going to focus on three key aspects that Mbonini has asked me to address. But before I go to those, if I may circle back and maybe spend 2 minutes on mRNA technology. Why did the WHO and partners make a decision that this mRNA Hub global program will be built on an mRNA platform and not viral vector or other platforms? There are a few very important reasons, and I'll share that because I've also noted some of the questions of the honourable members is around the importance of aspects of mRNA technology. Firstly, mRNA technology is non-live. It does not include any live pathogens. It is sequence specific, which means that a component of the sequence of the virus or the different strains can be replicated or duplicated and used in the production of the virus. It therefore lends itself to great flexibility, for example, to make an Omicron specific or any other variant specific virus. The second component is safety. RNA does not integrate into the human genome system. It is degraded the moment the protein is made. Remember, we tell the body to make the protein that the immune system can recognize so that it can arm. RNA, that protein is degraded the moment it is made and the body recognizes. In terms of immunogenicity,
This is the group of vaccines, if you compare to all the COVID-19 vaccines that in fact have been approved by the WHO and other regulatory authorities, the two mRNA vaccines that are approved and has full market authorization and now has more than 8 billion billion doses been administered to people, induces a very potent human response. And I think Richard pointed out the nature of this pathogen is unique and very interesting. Because of its changes, we will need continuous vaccination. But the current RNA vaccines have demonstrated very effectively the immune responses and have also clinically demonstrated that it prevents death and severe hospitalization, and there is a period of at least 6 to 9 months of protection. Because it's also self-activating, it stimulates the immune system to protect. And then very important, in manufacturing, this is an in vitro a transcription, it's not an in vivo. There's no cell cultures involved, and it's very scalable. To give other members an idea, when you visit the facilities, with a 5-liter bag of the drug product, which is pre-formulation, one can make close to 10 million vials, doses, 10 million doses of a vaccine, which is phenomenal in terms of its scalability. So I thought I'll share that a bit with the members. Then if I may circle back to Safra, the very important question, and Bonini very clearly outlining the role of the regulator versus the role of the product development and manufacturing team. However, I can confirm, as per some of my earlier slides, we already had several consultations with Safra. And the reason being is Safra has a critical role to play to license this facility to ensure that we meet all the quality standards for a safe and effective vaccine. Safra also plays a critical role in the clinical approval and the clinical trials that need to be designed. And that brings me to the question of safety. There's many questions around safety. All I can state at this time is that this vaccine candidate, as it's in development here in South Africa, in this consortium, is taken through stringent safety testing in pre-clinical settings, in vitro, in the laboratory, but also in animal testing to ensure that safety profiles are optimized and maximized. At the same time, also efficacy before we do the clinical trials when it actually goes into the arms of humans. Can we design improved safety in a process? Of course we can, because we have these different enzymes used, there's different composition of matter and lipids used in this process to formulate, to stabilize the vaccine, and the utmost safety procedures and focus is then brought into this development. I want to answer a short question on the generation, the renewable energy to fuel the plant before I talk about IP. A very important question. A facility such as this can never be without power, not even 1 second. So the systems included here is battery backup, which we would call uninterrupted power, that will fuel the critical components in case of power failure, which we have regular with load shedding. That then brings a diesel generator, 800 kVA power to drive this facility, cannot be done on solar and wind and renewable on its own. We carefully reviewed to optimize the green energy and the green component of the facility. And when the members visit, we'll be happy to get the engineers talk through why it was so critical that this facility, the BioVac facilities, these manufacturing facilities that can never ever be without power, needs to have a number of backup goals. If I could talk about intellectual property, the mRNA global landscape in terms of intellectual property is a very busy landscape. Original development work in mRNA started in the 1960s, and again the cancer case focusing on therapeutic uses for cancer. When COVID hit, already there were one or two vaccines, Zika fever and Lassa fever in development using the same mRNA platforms for vaccine development, it was possible to fast track that in 2020 to have a fast track vaccine. And COVID really stimulated the application of mRNA to vaccines. But the intellectual property landscape, because this is such an attractive platform now for vaccine development, and it leans itself to so many benefits, there are thousands of patents being filed as the landscape unfolds. What is important in for this particular project, and what is very important for COVID-19, was there are patents that will block our ability to make the COVID vaccine and put it in the market, because these are restricted to intellectual property rights in some of the territories that these products will be produced as part of the network. For that, the TRIPS waiver is an important discussion. South Africa leading those discussions with membership countries, as well as the voluntary waivers that has been declared by Moderna and BioNTech not to stand in the way of this mRNA hub project and low and middle income countries to be able to use mRNA for the production of COVID vaccines. That gives us the protection. But Mbeneni indicated a challenge that we have in terms of South Africa specifically, and the fact that South Africa's patent system is a non-examining system, great to hear that is under review. There is a patent filed in South Africa by Moderna, which claims the rights to any vaccine containing RNA. That is problematic for this platform. That will mean that we, post-COVID pandemic, we cannot produce vaccines using mRNA. We cannot even do it. HIV, TB, flu, Lassa fever, Ebola fever, schistosomiasis, all the neglected diseases and the burden of diseases for low and middle income countries, unless we address this particular patent, which is broad. The claims have been rejected in the United States, in Europe, in China, in Australia, in Japan, and in all the major economies. But because we are not an examining system, these claims were approved in South Africa. And I'm happy to say that South African government, working with us, Department of Higher Education, Science and Innovation, working around it to assist us with freedom to operate. I also want to mention another way that we are addressing the freedom to operate issue is through innovation in our innovation by the scientists, engineers, and the partners to use different lipids, to use a different process with different ratios so that we have our own intellectual property, our own knowledge base that gives us the freedom to operate. But in the short term, this particular patent in South Africa claiming all the rights to mRNA, it will help us. I've given the IP overview sufficiently. Please add if you feel necessary.
No, thanks very much, Peter. I think that really addresses the issue quite properly. I just wanted to indicate that Honorable Kasha, on the question of visiting the facilities, we would really like to encourage that to happen. And as per Petro's request, that maybe sooner rather than later, because at some point there will be closures that relate to some of the work that needs to be done, especially prior to SAPRA's accreditation process. So I suppose that we probably would, Petro, you can give us some indication of dates as to which will be the best. But we really would be more than happy to organize for the visit by the members of both these committees to just see what actually is going on there. I think overall, Petro, can you indicate the timing? That would probably be much better.
Mbeneni, we will probably start closing the facility towards the end of July, which means that you will have to full space suit to be able to go inside it, which will be very, very difficult. They're viewing panels, so the honourable members will be able to see the bioreactor and where mRNA is made, but it won't give you full access to the facility. So if by before end of July we could host a visit, that will be really great.
Okay, thanks very much. Honorable Chairperson, I think we have addressed almost all the questions. We have no test areas where we are going to need to come back with additional information. So we take responsibility that we'll come back with that. But for questions that we can deal with now, I think that's just about it. Unless you want to have any other that we might have left out. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Dr. Morfitt, as well as to all our colleagues from the different entities or organizations involved in this work. We truly appreciate you availing yourself. On the issue of the visit, let's start there perhaps. The time limitations are well noted, and we will do the committee secretariat make sure that we're able to come earlier. I think we are, of course, due to go for recess soon, but I think members, if we are truly interested in going to see the site, maybe we'll have to be innovative about how we are there. I mean, really, the bulk of the presentation has been made. So our would be to go and view the space, and then also ask follow-up questions that may arise from the physical oversight you would have done. And then I think it would be important, of course, for us to have a joint sitting of some sort on local content and procurement, looking at a range of industries. And in that, maybe we should consider it below here for us to expand on this particular matter on how we can ensure and create an enabling environment for locally produced content to be procured. And then we need to look at having further discussions, and we note that that's coming out quite strongly from colleagues from the DSI that we and we may have to expand the participants of that particular discussion, but looking into issues around intellectual property, maybe also working with SAPRA in terms of creating or in relation to the regulatory environment. And then we would need to perhaps emphasize the importance of BHEC and yourself coming together to discuss how to discuss skills development in that particular area. And then lastly, I think I'll leave it at that. But observations from members. Concerns from members are duly noted, and what I think becomes important for us to look into the key issues that are coming out of these engagements and seeing how we can elaborate further on them. I think there are a number of key issues that are coming out, and they may make them work for us as a committee to look them and have even other interactions with other departments and other committees around these particular matters. I think I'd like to leave it at that. I hope members' questions have by and large been covered. On the information that we had wanted that requires further detail, Mr. Martin, we can kindly have colleagues send that information to us via email. Because that may need for you colleagues to send us the information in writing. We truly appreciate that. And then I think colleagues can work together in trying to finalize the dates of when we can go physically to the center. Can I check with Dr. Jacobs if there isn't any other matters that you would find to be important for us to lift as the two committees coming out of the city?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, there are a number of those that are
I noticed that the questions were answered very well. I do get an impression that there is a particular understanding that needed to be had with regards to quite a lot being discussed, quite a bit, most of it in the medical field, a lot of medical jargon being used, which I guess not all of us would understand. But I also understand, as I was listening to it, I also understood that it is a language that has been acquired by those who work in the field, so it's not very easy to take certain words and explain them in general language and to therefore understand why our colleagues at the presenters would have spoken like they did. But I think that just impresses on us the need to probably discuss again through a joint committee again when you do have the type of discussion to for us to assist you, and when we have similar challenges in our portfolio committee, that we also invite yourself, where you will also then be able to give us some direction when it comes to critical issues around medical students. Their training programs, training platforms, and also where we currently are with the challenge of the training of medical specialists. So we'd appreciate that again from yourself. But as far as I am concerned, I do not have any particular concerns with regards to the work apart from what has been mentioned by the members. And I think when we would want to have another engagement with the Department of Science and Innovation, as I said earlier, we should again make that a joint committee meeting, and we are certainly looking forward to it. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jacobs, to you and members of your committee. The colleagues from the content team of the committee are also really excited about the visit. I was very tempted to share with you what Dr. Renee Osborne just indicated to me, but I think I'll leave it to myself for now. And Shanaz, together with the committee secretary of health, We'll work together to see when will be the best time for us to go to the site. But thank you so much, Dr. Jacob. Indeed, I think these joint committee meetings can really assist us in trying to strengthen each other's workers' committee in the various areas. And so we will reach out to yourselves with health again to really support some of the work that we need to be doing. And feel free to also engage us on whatever aspect around higher education that you may be struggling with, and of course science and innovation as well. We would more than avail ourselves. Honorable members and colleagues, I think we can then conclude the meeting. And thank you very much for availing yourself. I think there was an announcement that I did want to make. I just can't remember now. I had noted it, but now it's disappeared, that I would have liked to make to members of the Portfolio Committee on Higher Education. But it's fine. We will make sure that this information is sent to yourselves via WhatsApp or email. Thank you so much, Honourable Members and colleagues. This meeting has officially come to an end. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson.
Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair.
Recording stopped.
Long live the Chair. Long live the Chair. Yeah.
How are you, my brother?
I'm good. I don't know. You know my laptop. The sound closed.
Long live! Long live! Yanga, long live!
No hotel. Hey, MMCs are problematic, okay?
This one specifically.
This one specifically, yeah?
one home. She's my neighbor.
Oh, okay.